Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Vitter Radio. Today's guest is Free Your Pixels. I'm going to start with some intro music, and then I'm going to introduce Free Your Pixels, and then we'll get started with the show. Thank you for joining us. Know that this is a call-in show. You have the opportunity to call in and ask questions of our guests. The number to call is 646-595-4533. Again, that's 646-595-4533. Now, that's a local U.S. number, and if you have unlimited long distance, that should be no problem for you to call in terms of any charges you might get for long distance. But if you're international and you just rather not call in and be on the phone, you can also send us questions by going to tinyurl.com and then VR questions. And that's questions with a plural, meaning with an S at the end. So VR is in Vitter Radio and then questions. What will happen is you'll just go to a form, and then you'll enter your name and your question or comment, and then I'll be able to see that come in, and then just leave, just either state the question or say what the comment is. So, to get started with our show, today we're going to be interviewing Free Your Pixels. Free Your Pixels is the remix artist behind the viral video mashup that combines President Obama's healthcare speech at the point where he was about to be interrupted by Joe Wilson, and mixes that with Kanye West's interruption of Taylor Swift at the MTV Video Music Awards. The YouTube video has gone viral, and as of about 9:45 this morning, the YouTube video has received 13,476 ratings, 7,355 comments, and a total of 7,757,831 views, which is quite an accomplishment, I think, for a night's work, because I don't think 24 hours passed since the video was put up. and the original VMAs happened, where Obama, basically Kanye interrupted Taylor Swift. So I'm pleased that it has brought Free Your Pixels to our show, and I'm welcoming. Thanks for joining us. I think it's a great opportunity to have you on the show, just to be able to pick your brain about this whole, you know, internet hit.
Well, thank you. It's really good to be here. Happy to talk to you.
So one of the first questions I have is the whole genesis of this. Were you watching the Video Music Awards?
You know, the fun thing is that I wasn't. I had already queued up the that particular clip of Obama's speech because when I heard and saw the Joe Wilson comment, it kind of sounded like to me the white cop at the end of the NWA song "F the Police," and I thought it'd be hilarious to sort of put that little bit at the end of the song where he's sort of, the cop is just shouting, "You lie," you know, and profanity laced for several seconds. Put that in place of Joe Wilson. And I did that, I think it was on September 10th or 11th. And so I had that up. And I actually wasn't watching the MTV VMAs, but I saw a bunch of trending topics on Twitter, and I checked it out, and everybody, and then my friends list was talking about like how they can't believe Kanye did that, and holy crap, and how he interrupted. So I looked around, and thankfully somebody had just posted a clip of it, and I was able to use some screen grab software to pull down the audio and place it into my video editing program, which essentially was already still up. So I was actually able to get it uploaded 7:30-ish that night. So probably within about a half hour or so of the actual event happening.
So that was pretty much a case of being at the right place at the right time. You'd already set up almost like a template for what this would be perfect for. And I can see on your YouTube site that it was indeed on September 11th that you'd done this video. And then, you know, the VMAs were just like, I think, a couple of days afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And it was, there were very few actual videos of the event up by the time I had posted it.
Yeah.
Mine was HD. And I, you know, I used the right keywords in the title and the description and stuff. So I think it was, yeah, it was the timing and, you know, people were, especially people who weren't watching the VMAs or wanted to watch it again, you know, everybody in that sort of age demographic was rushing to YouTube to see this outrageous event. And they were, you know, it was lucky enough that when you sorted the videos by how recently they were uploaded, mine was really near the top for a lot of them. And so then it just kicked off from there. I was able to get the link in a few well-placed comments on some political blogs like Daily Kos, Huffington Post, a few other sort of celebrity gossip blogs. And yeah, it just took off from there, and I realized, holy crap, I need to start. You know, I need to make a Twitter feed, and I need to, you know, set up an email inbox because people are going to be asking me questions and stuff. But it's unbelievable. I am still in shock that it got this many views. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's amazing. I always hear that when someone when someone's video becomes like a viral hit. They never expected it to happen. But it sounded like you had some sort of preparation. It doesn't sound like you were a newbie to this, or that you were, you know, because you'd done the NWA, so what was it like, I guess, for you when you were making it? Were you like, wow, I need to do this right away? Were you getting nervous and scared about the timing of it? Did you think someone was going to beat you to it?
Yeah, I mean, I figured somebody would put two and two together in the manner that I did. I'm a freelance graphic designer, so my work schedule is crazy. I could have been in the middle of a project and not even heard about this until the next morning. So I was really lucky that I had a free evening. It's really phenomenal, and the response has been pretty great. I mean, of course, given the subject matter and given that they're YouTube comments, there's a ton of racism. But overall, I mean, it's, you know, of those 7,355 comments, I'm going to guess at least 7,000 are just simply like LOL.
Right.
And there are a bunch. I actually got a few messages to my account from people saying, oh, dude, I was totally thinking of doing that. You beat me to it. So.
Now, it's great to have you on the show to just have a sense of this inside view of what it's like for you being a YouTube user and then dealing with this much of a response in terms of, you know, comments and ratings and views. Like, how is it for you on your side in terms of handling that, whether it's the comments or emails, or like, did you have to do something special when it got to, you know, started getting to a million?
Not particularly. I mean, it's nice. All the messages are pretty inobtrusive, in the sense that it's kind of hidden away in the corner of the screen, and it's not that obvious. I try to read every personal message I get. A lot of them are business proposals regarding your YouTube videos, which I guess anybody who has a decent number of views on any video gets, just from random people or spammers who want, you know, need a link to their product, and they promise some sort of return on the sales they get from it. I think it was after I reached 2 million or so, I got a message from YouTube saying that my video was eligible for revenue sharing, where a cut of sort of the banner ads and built-in ads around the video on that page, I would get a cut of. I didn't really go into it much further, so there might have been more stipulations, but generally the fact that I didn't originally produce any of it, it was a remix, probably would have fallen foul of a few regulations, and the way YouTube worded the requirements made it seem like I wasn't eligible. But in general, yeah, the comments have been really positive. Lots of ha 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 for several lines. And the nice thing is there are actually probably more than 100 proposed video responses to my video, and I've looked through some of them. Some of them are really lame, but there are also some really interesting ones that sort of take that concept and take it in a different direction or do a similar type remix, which I'm more than happy to promote.
I find that amusing because, in a way, you've done something that's original and has really taken off, and then now it almost seems like I'm imagining that you're like now some kind of producer reviewing proposals for similar type work, and you're able to look at them and see which ones you want to approve for being on air or not.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So speaking of the fact that you were a graphic artist, you know, people might be interested in what kind of software you used to create this. Was it anything special? Was it like a video editing and audio editing, or a combination of both?
Yeah, I'm on a Mac, so I used Final Cut Pro. And I used the Firefox plugin Download Helper to download the both the footage from Barack Obama's speech. And I actually used a screen grabber software called Snaps Pro to capture the audio, which you can record. The really nice thing about the program is it can record video of any portion of the screen you like along with the audio. So all I needed to do was really grab that few seconds of audio. And then I was able to pull that into Final Cut Pro, and I exported as an MPEG-4 in HD, and it was up then. It was YouTube friendly.
How long did it take?
Oh, geez, I don't know. I'm going to guess maybe 10 to 15 minutes. I mean, most of the work was already done. The length of time between Obama getting interrupted and him saying that's not true is actually pretty short. So what I had to do for the original NWA cut, I had to get, cuts to, wide shots and to close-ups of senators and congressmen and stuff. So that already was in place. So I just had to extend it a bit more, and then that was all set. So it was basically a matter of pasting in the video, making sure the audio matched and it wasn't too distorted. And I got Kanye to interrupt at precisely the right time to make sense. One thing I really wish I could... I really wish YouTube could let me revise and re-upload the video, because now that we have audio of Obama calling Kanye a jackass, I'd love to try and edit that into the original piece so yeah. Obama can say a bit more than that's not true.
Right. Well, yeah, I understand what you mean. It's everything that happens afterwards that you ahead of time would have not known that you could have done, and that could probably even be a separate video in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
To go back a little bit to the whole editing process, did you also need to do something to match the audio levels? Were there different for Kanye at the VMA as opposed to the Obama speech?
Yeah, I mean, Kanye was shouting into the mic. I mean, he was drunk, so he probably wasn't caring too much how his voice sounded. That was a little tough. But really, thankfully, I didn't have to do a lot to it because the setting of the Obama video is it's a big hall. There are microphones. It makes more sense because it's a similar venue as the VMAs versus. I've seen other remixes where it's like small, you're in a room with something happening and then Kanye West interrupts with, sounding like he's on, a PA system. So in that sense, I really didn't have to change a lot because the format's the same, the situation was the same, so it didn't seem out of place too much to have the kind of distortion that you get on a handheld mic. Because, Obama was on a mic and everything.
Okay. What would you say was the most surprising thing that's happened out of all this in terms of how popular this has gotten? I'm sure, like you said, you've gotten lots of offers and stuff. What are some of the other things that have happened as a result of this?
I think the most surprising thing was getting a shout-out by Bill O'Reilly. I think that was pretty hilarious. And I believe that's if you search Bill O'Reilly Kanye West on YouTube, apparently he's been the subject of Bill O'Reilly's scorn before, but I believe there's one or two videos of him playing the original Kanye video and then playing my remix, and then him calling me a patriot for making him laugh. It was pretty great. I mean, I usually don't watch. I'm not the sort to watch Fox News. So when I heard that, and actually heard that through video comments on the page, it was like, "Hey, I just watched this video on Bill O'Reilly," and my girlfriend and I were like, "You're kidding me!" So it was that night. So we waited. I guess it was maybe an hour or two to see the rerun of the Bill O show. And unfortunately, the price of that was we had to watch the Bill O'Reilly show, and that scarred me. But once we got past most of that, and thankfully mute helped.
Right.
It was at the very end. It was sort of, I guess his segment is kind of like Stephen Colbert's mockery of it is, you know, tip of the hat, wag of the finger. His is pinheads and patriots. So
right.
Kanye was the pinhead and I was the patriot. So that was very entertaining. Yeah.
Now, when something like that happens, I guess, like you said, you heard it third party. It wouldn't be the case that you'd be contacted for permission to use it, or you'd be contacted at all. They just used it, and it's not like they invited you to the show or anything. It just happened.
Oh, boy, yeah. Yeah, it's I wasn't sure how that was going to work. So I think after it reached, like, you know, a million or so, that might be arbitrary. When I saw it was really taking off, I set up a Twitter account and a Hotmail account for, you know, in case somebody has questions about it, or I was crossing my fingers if, you know, a show wanted to, that radio show or a TV show or whatever wanted to ask me questions about it. I didn't get contacted by Bill O'Reilly's people, but I mean, that's fine. It would have been weird. Anyway.
Either before. After, I would take it, like not even up until now. Because I figure, you know, and just to share a little bit of what I know already about this, like, there was a New York Times post on your video as well, and there
right.
was reference to the fact that you had, you know, differing political views, you know, with Fox News and Bill O'Reilly. And I would have thought, like, gee, after that there might have been something, but I guess not really anything.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't an article in the Times; it was a blog post from the Times. So I imagine it's not on the radar of Bill O's folks or anybody else. But yeah, I was hoping for a shout out from the left, but I didn't get any love from Olbermann or Maddow. It was very, very entertaining, and we definitely TiVo'd that clip of O'Reilly. I did hear also in the comment thread that it was on the Jimmy Kimmel show, but I haven't been able to track that down or verify that. So I'm still not sure about that.
Okay. I just want to remind our listeners that they can call in if you're listening to the show now and you have questions. You can call 646-595-4533 if you don't mind being on air. You can also send questions to us through a form online at tinyurl.com/VR, as in Vitter Radio, questions, plural, with an S at the end. Now, I know I'm interviewing you because I'm interested in all this stuff and everything. Has anyone approached you to be interviewed?
No, you're first. You're the first, yeah.
Now, the blog post, it seemed like, you know, maybe there's, like, I don't know how you feel about, like, certain privacy things, like, but it seemed like the blog post mentioned, like, your political thoughts or took quotes or even, like, you know, mentioned your name and stuff. Were you ever contacted about that in terms of the New York Times blog post?
Yeah, I mean, that was all. Actually, I got an email from the author of the post, and I shot an email back, and I was wavering whether or not to use my real name, mostly because I have a remix up on the Free Your Pixels account that is a remix of a Marines commercial, And my good friend Jonathan McIntosh has done a lot of those and gotten a lot of hate mail and threats as a result. So I was a little worried about that, but I figured, you know, what the hell. This is on the New York Times blog post, you know, one-off kind of thing. So, yeah, the New York Times was actually, the guy who was writing was really good about it, and I shot off an email, and he said, you know, these are the parts I think I'm going to probably, you know, quote from, if that's all right. And I said, yeah, that's totally fine. So yeah, that's actually well done on their part.
Is this now, I didn't see there were too many videos. I guess this is something sort of you do for fun. Are you, like, now getting the sense of, like, well, people are expecting of me what I'm going to do next, or I need to take a break from this, or...
Yeah, I'm going to go on hiatus, yeah.
Okay.
I do have other remixes floating around on YouTube through other accounts I had previously. It's one of those things for me, you know, it's an opportunistic thing. If I find something that I think would be funny, especially if it's a current event, I'm totally up for doing more of that. And I was hoping there'd be something crazy happening at the Emmys, but the Emmys are just so boring.
Yeah.
Nothing really happened there. So,
yeah.
Unfortunately, it didn't seem like I figure, you know, this is going to be the next thing. I'll be like YouTube touring the award circuit. Just, you know, trawling for outbursts and weird things. But I guess I'll have to wait for the next one, which is, I guess, the Academy Awards in the winter.
Right, right. It's amazing. You know, it makes me think of those kind, I forget what they call them, but it's these camera guys who go out to film what could be possibly be news. And I think they call them stringers or something. I'm not sure the exact word, but they're always on the lookout for what's going to be the next thing that could be a hot news item that they can then, you know, sell to a news station and then it becomes really popular. And
mm-hmm.
I can sort of see that. And, like, yeah, just even hearing your story, I'm sure there are lots of people who are now, you know, thinking to themselves, oh, okay, this is how it happened. Maybe I can... So just for our audience, I want to play the actual audio from here because I actually have it so people can get a sense of actually what we're talking about. So
right.
This is the mix of Obama, who I believe was doing a speech on health care on the floor of Congress. And instead of getting interrupted by Joe Wilson, he gets interrupted by Kanye West. Basically, he has a response. But as you all know, you can see the YouTube video at youtube.com/freeyourpixels. So here's the audio from the video.
The reforms I'm proposing would not apply to those who are here illegal.
I'm going to let you finish. But Beyonce had one of the best videos of all time.
Not true.
That was great. It was pretty much seamless. And it also seemed like most of the crowd noise that you used was actually from Congress as opposed to the MTV crowd.
Yeah, yeah. I was a little worried about, you know, the little woo right before or as Kanye was speaking. It was a little bit out of place. But, yeah, I was able to pull in the booing and the sort of the raucous. I had to shift that around a little bit to make it work. But yeah, that was all from the original Obama video. So
now I wanted to ask you about this because this seemed particularly interesting. Also, in looking at your video, I know a lot of vidders, when they do videos, they basically say something, give some sort of disclaimer that basically says that this video is, you know, this is not their own video. This is property of whatever movie studio. This is purely
mm-hmm.
for, you know, fan-based work and or it's a tribute type thing. And they don't really say they make sure to add that disclaimer because they don't want to get in trouble. And one of the
right.
things I noticed about your video is you had something that seemed a little bit more specific, almost lawyer-like, in terms of describing you know, what your disclaimer was. I'm actually going to try it up here so I can actually read from it. Just up the video and taking a look at your comment section here. Let's see. So what you say is, this transformative remix work constitutes a fair use of any copyrighted material as provided for in Section 107 of the U.S. Copyright Law. And that seems a little more specific than what most bidders would write. Could you tell us, like, why you chose that and what that does?
Yeah, I mean, that's I've seen that elsewhere. And I have to say, I had that language suggested to me from Jonathan McIntosh, who has done a lot of that stuff. But yeah, it's a different. Not only is it a different wording, it's also a sort of a different stance you're taking toward the copyright holder. So, with the kind of disclaimer that you described, seems more like we know we're technically doing something wrong, and you can take this down if you like, but really we're doing it out of respect, and we really love, you know, the genre or the series or the canon, and you know, it's a tribute. It's, you know, me expressing how I like the series and sort of taking it into a different direction, so please don't take this down. And, you know, in most cases, it's not that big of a deal for the copyright holders if I think a lot of them have come around to the fact that really, you know, fan-made videos are helping their bottom line because it's getting more exposure out there. You know, it's getting fans more invested in the franchise, stuff like that. So with mine, it's more it's a bit more of an aggressive stance saying I actually do have the right to put this up and to show this. That right would be probably undercut if I had done some sort of revenue sharing or if I had, you know, sold the product through it or somehow got a cut of the advertising. I think that's a much shakier legal ground. But the fact that I was giving it away for free and the fact that it falls well within the standards of fair use, you know, I went with that one. I think a lot of the fan videos that I've seen really could fall under fair use too. And it may just be not getting the word out about, you know, what the language is and what exactly your rights are under copyright law. You still have, thankfully, some rights to change around pre-made content, much to the chagrin of copyright holders and Hollywood. But there's still some rights there. They haven't gotten rid of all of them yet, thankfully.
Yeah, what I usually hear is that the problem is most of the time the audio or the piece of music that, rather than, like, you can make an argument for the video being transformative work, but not so much the audio.
Right. Oh, so if it's like, you know, a certain song that's played in its entirety, and then you do, like, the video on top, essentially sort of making kind of a music video.
Right.
But yeah, because you're not really changing it. I can understand why that's taken down, unfortunately, you know.
Yeah. And one of the things that I noticed as well is that you're an advocate of Creative Commons.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I sort of understand and I think would sort of be good to go over since you are familiar with it. What exactly is Creative Commons for, like, the newbie, the person who doesn't know?
Right. Well, traditionally when you create a work, if this is a painting, if it's a written work, if it's a video, audio, basically, you know, anything that you can produce and sort of show to the world. Generally speaking, outside of Creative Commons, you really have two options. You can either copyright it, or you can release it into the public domain. That's sort of like an all-or-nothing sort of approach.
Right.
And there are problems inherent in both. Like, if you release it in the public domain, anybody can snatch it up and do whatever they want and turn a profit from it and not give a penny to you. Others, you know, if it's copyrighted, there are many people who might have wonderful, neat things they want to do with that work and potentially even, you know, contact you and get involved and, you know, partner or stuff like that. But the fact that it's copyrighted is a turnoff, and it's sort of, you know, a wall put up between that. So what Creative Commons tries to do is chart a course in the middle, actually chart several courses in the middle. So what you can do is if you go to creativecommons.org, they have a really great step-by-step process where they say basically, okay, you have your work, you know, choose the sort of work it is. You know, it's written, it's video, it's audio. And then it takes you step-by-step saying, you know, do you want this work to be unchangeable? Do you want this work to be, you know, do you want yourself to have credit wherever this is shown? Do you want people to be able to remix it, to be able to make derivative works? Can other people use this and make money from it, yes or no? So it's those sorts of questions that you go through, and then at the end you're given a Creative Commons license, which is standard sort of boilerplate legalese with some very simple English on top with some really nice iconography showing exactly what you can and can't do with a work. And the idea is you have, you know, little icons that you can put on your website. There's a link to a very simple simple English page for that license. So you have a lot more control over your creative works. And the idea is to change the attitude that everyday people and content creators have about rights and how they interact with the culture around them. Basically saying, you know, let's pry open this discourse and let people really remix and change things that they receive. And really the interesting thing is the United States has a long history of subverting copyright. If you look historically, the most vigorous defenders of intellectual property, of copyrights on books, patents, has always been the dominant sort of political and economic power of the time. So, you know, that's where all the creative stuff is happening. That's where all the really high-polished, well-done stuff is coming out. So right after we gained our independence, it was Britain and, to a lesser extent, France, where they were putting out books, you know, and patents and patented objects and business devices. And, you know, for much of the first 50, 60 years, really up until the Civil War, we could have cared less about what kind of patents they held in London. You know, we were a fledgling economic and political power, and we needed as much stuff as cheaply as possible. So we really didn't care too much about enforcing foreign copyright law. And even domestic copyright law was very, very limited. Patents expired rather quickly. Copyrights expired rather quickly. The idea was, you know, all right, so Americans can invent things, make money, but also, you know, they can't make so much money that they don't have the incentive to continue to invent, which I think we should really go back to. But now that the U.S. is the dominant economic power, they're sort of, you know, the bully on the street when it comes to copyright laws. So in international trade agreements, in these conferences, hell, maybe it's being brought up at the G20 right now, because it's often put in contention. The general trend has been the U.S. pushing for all other countries to adopt the same copyright laws that we do. So they've been pushing for the EU, for Canada, to bring their copyright and patent law into line with us, which I think is a horrible idea, because our patent and copyright regime is really out of whack really ridden by the interests that most benefit from it, and not the people. I think the EU's and Canada's more social democratic tradition has a better handle on exactly how you can chart a middle course for that. And the third world too. I think that they're in the position where, even with China, you have. I know you. I'm sure you've read the news articles about the rampant, software piracy and video piracy and movies coming out on DVD on the streets of Beijing. The day after they come out in theaters.
Right.
So you can tell, it's far from uniform in terms of enforcement. And there's also it also has a more serious tone in if you look at medicines. So there are a lot of countries that through, say, maybe IMF loans or World Bank loans are forced to adopt patent law that prevents them from importing cheap generic versions of AIDS drugs and other really important vaccines because, it costs so much and it's still within the patent here in the U.S. So there's a very serious aspect to how we approach intellectual property and how we deal with creative works that actually are responsible for saving people's lives.
I want to go back to something in terms of like getting an understanding of this. I've been sort of taking all this in, and it seems like there's definitely an aspect where it relates to creative work and then extends to more serious issues
mm-hmm.
with our relationships with other countries and their works and everything. And I want to definitely go through all that, but I'd like to go back to the whole Creative Commons aspect.
Sure, yeah, I got off on a ramble. This is a hobby horse of mine. So.
No problem. So with the Creative Commons license, it sounds like it gives more flexibility to copyright things instead of having it be like all one way or the other. The thing with and then you can correct me, like with my point of view regarding this, and it's probably like maybe a layman's point of view, but for me, Creative Commons, does it have any real power? Is it as strong as copyright? Or is it a different form of power? Like, let's say if someone were to take something that you put a license on for Creative Commons.
Right. I mean, it was actually founded by a copyright lawyer, Lawrence Lessig. And so the Creative Commons license, no matter how you form it, is protected by actually the law that underpins copyright. So you can it is actionable if somebody violates your Creative Commons license. In most cases, especially if you're not a large corporation, and the person who's taken your work unfairly isn't a large corporation. You can usually work this out by like an email or two,
right?
But it's. I can't say that it's been tested that a case has actually gone to court. Things have been settled before they reach court. Things have been just solved over a few emails. That's when you slap the license on that's binding, and people have to. Obey it under penalty of law, really.
Well, that's good to know. I mean, I definitely don't want to, create the image that then this gives you the power to be a jerk and start suing a whole bunch of people, but it's good to know that it has some kind of merit because I've seen it, and it's, I guess for me, I've had a sense like, well, is this just something somebody created that really doesn't have any power? It's just sort of like a goodwill kind of thing, like, please
mm-hmm.
don't. But it's good to know that it has that. The other thing that's there for me is like when I think of copyright, I think, well, okay, copyright has real power because I actually have to register this with the government and I actually have to pay money. So if I do that, then that means it's real. But Creative Commons is like just something anybody can do on the net, and it doesn't seem like it costs money, so therefore it's not really as powerful. I take it like viewing it that way might be incorrect.
I mean, it's with copyright, it's interesting. If you can prove, if you can prove original creation of the work, you don't necessarily have to register with the Copyright Office to have your stuff protected by from it taken by other people. And that I'd have to brush up on that, but duplication. I mean, and I think this is relatively new. Before, you know, it's perfunctory. You have to add copyright, you know, 2009, blah blah blah, at the bottom of your website or an article or something like that. Now I believe it's implied. So really, it's, you know, even if you put copyright or not, you're still protected under these laws. This just makes that more specific. And it's an invitation for people to do things with your work. Whereas either having a copyright notice or not doesn't really change much. If people are going to take it, I really don't think they're going to care if it says copyright or not. To be honest, so I think having Creative Commons language in there is an invitation for some of this derivative works to really come above board. I mean, I know I love to hear if somebody uses my work in some interesting way. I think it's not only protecting your rights in a very specific way because you're spelling them out exactly what you want to happen or not happen to it, but you're also, you know, you're inviting them to start this cultural conversation with the stuff that you've created and potentially that you've also taken from other people.
Now, case in point, I guess this would also work with your own Obama video because I know that I've sort of seen, I guess, what could be considered derivative work of your video. And I guess if Creative Commons were in place, what you would get is credit that you generated the work if it was worded within that particular Creative Commons license. Because I've seen people just basically upload your own video like in whole and complete with no alterations. And I guess that it may be fine with you, but if you had a particular license that said you wanted credit, it probably wouldn't be fine for you if they didn't give you credit.
Right, and I've seen some of them, and a decent number of them actually link back to me, which is, you know, I could care less who posts it elsewhere on YouTube. I'm not making a penny from it, and yeah, the more people that laugh in this world, the better. I think... Yeah, it gives you more rights that way, and I think especially if I had put more work into it, I might be a bit more protective. But
right.
You know, like I said earlier, it really didn't take me too long. A lot of other people thought about it, so you know, if I was making something really big and involved, I'd probably want a bit more exclusivity on, or at least you know, making sure that folks give me. Credit where credit's due, but I'd still be entirely up for folks, you know, remixing things. So I didn't really think it was applicable or necessary to put a Creative Commons license on it, especially since it's a remix. It's not like my original work, where if I had videotaped a bunch of stuff or if I created a short film, I'd feel a bit more sense of urgency in putting a Creative Commons license on it, but. Not for something that's a simple, you know, 30-second remix of something.
Now, walk me through the process. So just to get an understanding for someone who's maybe doing this for the first time. So I create something, whether it's a blog or a video. I just go to Creative Commons, and they will sort of have, like, a selection of different licenses I can choose.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would pick one of those, and then they would give me sort of like an image of a Creative Commons license that I can post on that blog or description of the video, and then people would click on that and they would be able to read what the license, you know, gives them permission to do or not do.
Precisely, and it's actually yes. So you can either choose the license from a list, or you can walk through sort of a questionnaire, which is nice sometimes. You know, basically talking about exactly what you want people to do or not be able to do with your work. Yeah, then you get a link and some sample language you can put at the bottom of your website or YouTube info box, and you're all set. It's that easy.
And then I've seen some people like, how far does it extend in terms of, can someone put that Creative Commons license, let's say, on their blog once, and then from then on, every post that they do is bound by that Creative Commons license? Does it have to be per individual work, or can someone like do it for their whole blog? Or
totally, I mean, it's a question of whether you put it at the end of the blog post itself or at the footer of the website. If it's just on the post, it'll just apply to the post, logically. But if you have it at the bottom of the blog, then everything in the blog that's yours to license is covered in that. So.
How did you first get involved with Creative Commons? Like, how did this interest arise in you?
I think it was Lawrence Lessig, who started it, was also involved in some high-profile court cases around copyright, specifically the Sonny Bono Copyright Extension Act, which I guess came out in '98. It was also called the Mickey Mouse Copyright Extension Act, because really the thing was, the very first images of Mickey Mouse, it wasn't even Mickey Mouse, it was Steamboat Willie, which was sort of like the predecessor of Mickey Mouse, you know, black and white cartoon, the very first images that were about to fall under copyright, which tells you how ridiculously long copyright is. If it takes almost, you know, a century. So Disney Corporation scrambled and pushed through this bill, and basically, you know, extending the copyright, but also, which was very disconcerting, it also pulled a bunch of stuff that had fallen to the public domain back into and under copyright. So that raised quite a ruckus, and it was the subject of a court case, which actually went up to the Supreme Court. In the end, the Supreme Court sided with Congress because the Constitution's vague in terms of what "for a limited time" means in terms of how long we should have copyrights and patents and protections. So basically, the court said, you know, it can be infinity minus a day, and it would count, because that's what's been happening. Every single time it comes up for expiration, Congress extends another 10, 15, 20 years. So it's in function perpetual. I hope that changes sometime in the near future. But that really got me interested. I was certainly, you know, I came of age when Napster was in full swing. I was, you know, in high school when that happened. So and that's really when copyright was sort of exploding on the scene. And in sort of the political circles I was traveling, that was also a hot topic. So, yeah, I think it. You know, I've been interested in these sorts of issues for a very long time. But in particular, you know, as I started to create stuff, I wanted people to be able to use that and extend it and do other things with it that I wouldn't even think of doing. And thankfully, Creative Commons came along and made it really easy for anybody to do that.
One of the we're wrapping up now because there's like about 5 minutes left, and I feel like we could definitely go into this a little further. It's like this could be even its own show. I wanted to get your sense, since you mentioned Steamboat Willie, and I know Disney was involved in that, preserving that copyright. Does it concern you that now Disney has taken over Marvel, that there may be issues of copyright there?
Yeah. I was really bummed when I heard about that. And on one hand, it seems like a good development to actually have people who draw with paper and pen back in Disney.
And have
sort of injection of more classical artists underneath the Disney umbrella. I'm not a big fan of excessively large corporations. I think they're counterproductive and they stifle more than they create. And I think that we may see more of that. And of course we may see more crap stamped with Marvel franchises. So the characters and stories they created. I don't really trust Disney to do a phenomenal job with, given their track record, especially if it's not kid related stuff. I'm really worried about that. But that's like, at least DC wasn't bought by Disney. I'd be a lot more worried and outraged if that was the case. I'm more of a DC fan than Marvel.
So now we have about 3 minutes, and I think we should wrap up. I want to thank you for being a guest on the show and being willing to talk about the whole creative process, as well as the whole aspect of Creative Commons, and I think that was particularly useful, and it gives me some of it. Go ahead. I'm sorry?
No, I was just agreeing with you. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm happy to help.
And I think I first really got a sense of Creative Commons working with Blip TV. They actually like walk you through and give you a drop down, because it's sort of like, it probably wouldn't have crossed my radar unless I dealt directly with some kind of video service, and they actually offered a Creative Commons license, and that sort of piqued my curiosity as to what it was. So just as a final note as well, what would be the address that someone would need to go to find out information about Creative Commons?
It's creativecommons.org.
Okay.
And if you look up Lawrence Lessig on Google, he has a lot of books out on this sort of issue of copyright, on the really horrible stuff that our copyright law supports, and how Creative Commons solves it. There's a ton of stuff on YouTube too, so maybe just YouTube Creative Commons, and you'll have, there's a ton of fan-made introductions to it, lots of lectures and presentations by Lawrence Lessig, just search around and there's going to be a ton of stuff.
And did you say that there was a YouTube channel called youtube.com/creativecommons?
I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Then I misheard it. I thought you said... So, but if people search,
search on YouTube for Creative Commons. I'm sorry, I used YouTube as a verb, which I guess hasn't caught on yet.
No problem. Well, thank you again, and it's been a pleasure talking to you. And I'll create some kind of show notes for the show. I think I'm just gonna end with the song that we started the show with. Do you have any last words you want to say or anything else?
It was great talking to you. And I can be reached via email or Twitter or my YouTube account if folks have any other questions. But thanks so much for letting me talk, and it was great talking with you.
Yep, same here. And just so everyone knows, your YouTube account is youtube.com/freeyourpixels, and your Twitter account also goes by that name?
That's correct.
Okay, great. All right. Well, thank you for audience for joining us for this show, and we look forward to bringing you more interesting and new shows as we go along. Thanks again. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.